honored to be with you, Martin, today. And let's get started with what's going on right now with the U.S. foreign policy in Ukraine. How do you make sense of this policy of continuation of the conflict between Ukraine and Russia? We know that the United States is behind this, is behind Ukraine, helping them to continue this conflict.
Well, all you really have to do is just do a little bit of research, and you'll see that in 2014,
Martin, it seems something going on with your system, because I can hear myself through your system. And
yeah, you were breaking up a little bit. I don't know. I'm right.
Okay. Let's start over.
Okay.
And you can answer the question if you want. I can ask it again.
Go ahead, ask again.
Okay. How we can make sense of what's going on right now in Ukraine, considering the U.S. foreign policy of the continuation of this conflict? How is it going to benefit the United States?
It does not. We have to understand that the main reason they wanted Biden in as president is because he just lets them do whatever they want. The neocons are in charge. Blinken, right now is the leader of the pack. But if you go back to 2014, you'll see, if just do a little bit of research, and when the revolution in Ukraine took place, Victoria Nuland was there. She's one of the, the queen of neocons. And they installed a government in Ukraine. And then that interim government is the one that started the civil war with the Donbass. They got their marching orders, go attack those Russians over there. And this has all been orchestrated to bring in, Russia into this whole thing. And you have basically three people that have been involved in the Biden administration, Garland, Blinken, and Victoria Nuland. All three claim that their families were from the Ukraine area, and all three claim that their families were persecuted by Russians. So I find this to be an extremely, it's a conflict of interest. How did three people from with personal family history to that area get involved and usurp basically the foreign policy of the United States? They are telling Washington people there that don't worry about any nuclear threat from Russia, because his nukes are old. They probably won't work, because he did retire 1200, and they've used that as the excuse. See, they're all too old. He'll never push the button. You had the former head of NATO, who was, the British guy, out there saying the same thing. Oh, they'll never push a button because they know it will blow back on them. They make it sound like they can just walk into Russia, conquer the whole country. You have one of the neocons here say that, made the press, oh, we could take Russia in 3 days. So I guess we'd only take 5 days to do, China, a day and a half maybe for North Korea. And a half a day for Iran, I suppose. I mean, these people are just, I don't know what to say. I mean, they have no consideration for the country. This is all a personal vendetta. I know some of these neocons. I mean, I know, Bill Kristol, and it was his father that started the neocon movement. And he wrote the book to go into Iraq, and they wanted to go into Iraq, basically, all the things, weapons of mass destruction, that was all a lie. They wanted to set up a military base there, move everything from Saudi Arabia to there, because it was holy land, et cetera. And that was, you know, bin Laden's argument over there. And they wanted to go right into Iran. And they got bogged down in Iraq, and that killed that plan. But, you know, look, I argued, you know, with Crystal. He thought that, and this is what he said, it was that if we remove the dictators from the Middle East, Saddam Hussein, Assad in Syria, and Gaddafi, oh, then we'll bring peace to the Middle East. And I am not kidding. They were basically saying, oh, these people are dictators. We go in, remove them, and we'll get a ticker tape parade. The people will cheer. This is how distorted these people are. And they're saying the same thing about Russia. Oh, Putin's evil. You know, if the Russian people like Crimea, they're mostly Russians. Okay, they speak Russian. They don't speak Ukrainian. Same thing in the Donbass. Most people have no clue of the history of Russia. Khrushchev, who came out, we will bury you. He grew up there in the Donbass. His successor, Brezhnev, was born there in the Donbass. Oh, but this isn't Russia. You know, and this has no benefit whatsoever for the country. Ukraine is honestly, you know, people that I've spoken to there, and I've written in on our blog, if Zelensky is assassinated, it's not going to be Putin. They feel, you know, it's going to be Ukrainian. And just do a little bit of digging. Yes, okay, fine. The head of Zelensky's bodyguard is a Ukrainian. The rest of them are Americans. He's afraid of Ukrainians. Only because there was a peace deal. Putin pulled his tanks away from Kiev. And basically, Boris Johnson from the UK hopped on a plane, ran over there, and told them, you're not allowed to seek peace. That made the front page of the Ukrainian Pravda newspaper. Ukrainians, maybe about 8 million or more, have left the country. They fled. A lot of the ones I talk to, they see Zelensky as a traitor, that he just takes orders from outside. And he even had to respond to some of them. No, we can decide if we want peace ourselves. After, you know, it made the front page news over there that they weren't allowed to seek peace for their own country. You know, they take orders from basically from Washington. I mean, they've just been the vanguard. And it's been a personal vendetta of a few people that have seized power. The American people aren't interested in invading Russia any more than the Russian average person isn't interested in invading Europe. I mean, wars are created by the leaders, not by the people. And that's why they demonize an individual. They did that to Saddam Hussein, always gassing people, this, that, the other thing. And they tried that with Assad. Oh, see, he's killing his own people. We have to go rescue them. All right, fine. The United States has more Americans in prison than any country in the world. So I guess Russia and China should come into the United States to rescue us, you know. Maybe, but these are all the propaganda things that they put out. It's a standard psychological war tactic. You demonize your opponent, get people to hate them, and then people are willing to line up and go fight. They did that to Trump, all right? And then what did they do? Oh, everybody that voted for Trump, mega, oh, they're horrible people. Hillary called them deplorables. Half the country she called deplorable. This is a psychological war tactic. And it's You can read the, you know, just the testimonies from Hermann Göring when he testified before, you know, the, you know, basically the Nuremberg trial. They asked him, oh, how did you ever get the German people to do this, blah, blah, blah. He says, oh, that's easy. You just tell them they're going to be attacked or this, that, the other. He says, it works the same in all countries. He says, oh, no, not in democracy. Oh, yes, it does. It's the same thing. He at least told the truth. And he I think he even said something like, you know, you got to convince us, what's a a poor schmuck going to get out of a war? He's just, you know, his basically the only thing he can hope for is to return from war in one piece, not missing a leg, an arm, or whatever, or dead. That's all he gets out of it. What else does he get? Nothing. So I mean, this is, you know, the words of Hermann Göring, you know, they're very true, but they're applied to everybody. And then there was Stanley Milgram, who was Jewish, took all they said, oh, the Germans killed all the Jews because they're different. So he's basically wrote a book, Obedience to Authority, which I recommend reading. But he conducted studies. He took an actor, put them in a room, tied wires to them, just took random people off the street and said, here, ask these questions. And every time he gets one wrong, you torture him with the electric shocks. And the guys in there scream, oh, my God, don't do this again. I mean, he was a good actor. And they kept doing it. And this was just random people from the street. And he concluded that if you think you are told by an authority to do something, you do it. And the book is called Obedience to Authority. It's just a psychological war tactic. And, you know, I think it's important to understand what these people do, because no matter what government you're looking at, they all kind of do this. They just know how to, you know, to manipulate society.
Yeah. When this conflict started, everybody was talking about that the United States, the main reason for this war in Ukraine was to destroy Russian economy and maybe overthrow Putin and his government. But in your opinion, what went wrong in this analysis? If we know that Ukraine and the size of their army was not considerable when it comes to the conflict, to this war against Russia. That's why many people are thinking that the main reason was to destroy the Russian economy. Why the West was not capable of doing that, in your opinion?
Mainly because they don't understand. All they have succeeded in doing is dividing the world. So now you have the SWIFT system versus the BRIC system. Again, these are these neocons, and they have seized American foreign policy. And it's all for personal reasons. You know, look, they wanted to go into Syria. Why? Because there was a pipeline they were trying to build from Qatar through Syria, and he rejected. And what was the pipeline? Oh, to cut off the gas sales from Russia. All right. When that failed, all right, you take Nigeria. They're building a pipeline after Nord Stream was blown up, a pipeline from Nigeria, you know, all the way up to, again, circumvent Russia and feed Europe, all right? And then all of a sudden there was a coup in Niger. Who hopped on the plane? Oh, Victoria Nuland, all right? This, they think, and from the day one, and you can, you know, do a little research yourself, they put sanctions on German companies that were providing pipes to create the gas lines back in the 50s. All right. They have always felt this policy that if they cut off the ability for Russia to make money from the West, the government will fail. You know, they've been at this since the 50s, right? They've waged countless wars. You can also Google up McNamara, and he did a book too before he died. It's on YouTube, and he was the neocon that took us into Vietnam. And before he died, he apologized. We were wrong. They went into Vietnam, and he says, we thought Russia was involved. That's why they went there. All right? He said, we were wrong. It was just a civil war. And 58,000 Americans died for that. How many millions of Vietnamese died? Because they were wrong. All right? They have not won a single war. Afghanistan. You name it. I mean, it's always this thing. And in my opinion, knowing some of these people, I think basically they grew up in the days when Khrushchev said, you know, we will bury you. Okay. And they riled up, well, we're going to spread democracy to the world. Well, when communism fell, I can tell you, because I was down in Washington, and I had some contact with, you know, President Reagan back then. And, you know, Gorbachev came to power and Reagan wanted to go meet him. And the neocons, you know, all right, he wasn't a communist anymore, so they couldn't use that line. So they said, oh, you can never trust a Russian. And Reagan rejected them. He says, no. And he went. If he did not go, the Berlin Wall would not have fallen. I mean, let's be real here. So they turned communism into just racism. And I think, honestly, that they're just angry that communism fell all by itself and they didn't get to shoot anybody. They spent their whole life hating communists. You know, you had McCarthy hauling people in and before the Senate. And then all of a sudden it falls. You spent your whole life hating an enemy, you know, and the enemy turns out to be you yourself. I mean, you know, that's basically it. You know, the same thing with China. Oh, they're communists. As you don't even know, they're not. Okay. You have to understand Asian culture. Communism, what is it? It means the government owns everything. I think China's got more billionaires than America right now. All right. They have private ownership. They have a debt crisis. Okay. The government party still calls itself the Communist Party. Why? Because in Asian culture, if they admitted, changed the name, then they have to admit that Mao was wrong. Okay. So they leave the name, but it's no longer communist. Okay. They, oh, well, they're authoritarian. Well, so is the United States. All right. You take abortion, they want to enforce it upon everybody. That's still authoritarianism, right? You know, democracies, we're supposed to, you know, be able to vote ourselves. We get no choice to vote. The West, Europe, head of Europe doesn't stand for election. She's basically appointed by the heads of all the different states. All right. That's basically what you would call a dictatorship. Oh, but no, we're a democracy. How is it a democracy if you can't vote for her? You know, we live in republics. We don't live in a democracy. All right. A democracy means we should be asked, shall we go to war with Russia? Yes or no? We're never asked questions like that. Vietnam, you're 18, you're old enough to be drafted and go die for your country. You were not old enough to have a drink, and you were not old enough to vote. But that's democracy. You know, you don't have a right to say no. And if you said no, you were thrown in prison as a draft dodger. So, I mean, we got to look at these things honestly. A democracy, we should have the right to actually vote on an issue. And we do not. We live in a republic. And a republic is we elect somebody that's supposed to represent us, and they never do. You have to understand the politics. I could run for Congress. No problem. I'll say whatever you want me to hear. Say, all right, I'll save the whales. I'll do whatever. All right. Then I get there. Day one, there's a meeting. Thank you. Great. Glad you made it. Okay. Now here's how it works. All right. You are told to vote and they tell you what to vote. Just look at the votes. They're down party line. Okay. I can tell you, I mean, I was there when the Tea Party won. And there was about 80 some guys that went to Congress, and the leader of the Republicans was John Bonner. And he basically ended up leaving because he could not deliver the Republican vote. Because they said, no, we're not going to vote party line. We were voted here for a particular reason. So what did he do? He retaliated. He took any congressman off a panel that had anything to do with finance that supported them. This is how it works. The speaker, the speaker of the House decides who goes on what parties, what panels. You're not allowed to stand up and make a motion on the floor of Congress. Oh, okay, I want this. No, all motions must come through a committee. And if you're not a good boy, you don't get on a committee. I mean, they have everything rigged basically very nice, neat, and formally. And they keep up the propaganda that we live in this democracy. And a democracy in Athens was that you were able to vote on a issue. A republic was you were represented and they vote on the issues. Let's, get it straight. So, there is no benefit to the average American, for any war. It was Vietnam and the inflation that caused that broke Bretton Woods and the gold standard. And these people are not rocket scientists. They're pretty stupid, most of them, honestly. And look, you fixed the gold at $35. Sounds nice. Okay. But then you did not limit the amount of dollars you can create. I think a three-year-old with a pocket calculator could figure out that Bretton Woods was going to collapse. But these people don't look at things long term. It's like, what do I got to do to win this next election? And I fear that, this is where we're headed. It's all coming more or less to a point at this stage where, if you look at Gallup polls, the confidence in government has fallen to like 7%. 7%. All right. I think news media is maybe just the one tick above it. That's it. And what are you going to do? I mean, people don't trust anything anymore. When Hillary started blaming Putin for interfering in the election and all that, then what election hasn't been challenged now? You had Merkel in Germany saying the same thing. Oh, Putin interfered in our elections. If you lose, somebody interfered. The downside to that is that now we're at the point, I don't think anybody's, our computer's basically showing that civil unrest is rising dramatically. I don't care who wins this 2024 election. Nobody's going to accept it. Either side, doesn't matter. Everybody's going to call it rigged one way or the other. You're already seeing lawsuits being filed. One state to remove 40,000 people that haven't proven that they're an American. You got another one going for 500,000 to be removed. I mean, this is the way politics is manipulated. Back in 1997, I actually had the mandate from Hong Kong to negotiate with Australia because it was going to be handed back to China in 98. And they wanted me to negotiate because they knew I knew the Australian government. So I went down and I met with former Prime Minister Paul Keating. And everything I said, let's give us this island off the side. No. Let us go into the upper left-hand corner. No. Everything was no, no, no. And I said, I got a blank check here. I can pay off your national debt. What's the issue? Is this, I thought it was racist. I said, you just don't like Chinese? And he said, no. They were fleeing communism. And if they were allowed into Australia, they would vote conservative. And he was a Labor government. This is what's going on with the migration crisis in the U.S. and in Europe. This is to change the politics. And I just went and voted actually this morning myself for a local election. All right. All I had to do was show a driver's license, photo ID. Is that your address? Yes. That's it. Okay. Did I have to prove I was American? No. And there are photos of lines of these migrants in here to get a driver's license. So that and an address and then they can vote. This election in 24, I'm telling you, it is not going to be accepted. You're looking at major civil unrest. It may even end up in the Supreme Court, particularly if Kamala actually won. Because it would be illegal. Has anybody proven? I mean, I didn't even have to prove that I was an American to vote. If I don't have to, and I'm here in Florida, the land of the free and home of the brave, what's going on in this country? So I'm not very optimistic about this election being accepted. You're going to see civil unrest, and our computer's been warning this may even be the last election we even have. It's gotten that bad.
Yeah. Martin, you mentioned the sabotage of Nord Stream pipeline. We know how important that case is and was for Germany and the economy of Germany. And when you look at the Europe, the economy of Germany is the foundation of Europe's economy. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's so important. On the other hand, Germany is ally of the United States in NATO. And when you think logically and you say, if my ally is strong, I'm strong. And if Germany is not strong, it's just going down. The German economy is not doing great right now. And it's going to influence my power, the way that I can manage the situation. But it doesn't seem that would be the case in Washington. They don't care. It doesn't seem that they do care about what's going on in Germany with the German economy. And what's so surprising for many of us that even the German government is not caring about what's going on in Germany. How we can make sense of this? How we can understand the type of thinking that they're having right now?
Well, first of all, the neocons in the United States, which are directing this, have no concern whatsoever about the economy or anything else. Only that they win, period. That's it. All right. This is a war against Russia, and they don't look at the economy. They don't look at what would happen going forward. The German politicians are the same. You just had an Estonia politician come out and said that, oh, Russia is too big and it needs to be broken up. You had, the Meloni, the prime minister of Italy, come out and said, oh, well, Russia is going to have to accept our terms. I mean, these people are out of their minds, I guess two world wars wasn't enough. I guess the third time's the charm. I mean, most people don't realize Hitler was actually respectful. He liked the monuments, etc. He said, don't bomb Paris, etc. He thought it was a beautiful city. All right. Colosseum's still there. He at least had some respect for history. He stole a lot of art and things of that nature. But this time you're talking about nuclear weapons. I'm sorry. You take out basically Rome and everything is gone. You know, I told him, I said, well, because I was just over there, you know, last month. And I said, I'm glad I'm here because it's maybe the last time I'm going to see the Colosseum. It might be gone by, I mean, no, I don't know, 30 years ago, with Reagan and everybody, they were concerned about peace, creating world peace. All I hear today is war, war, war. And I fear that really what's going on is that the since World War II, they've been borrowing year after year after year. All right. And with no intention of paying anything back. This is what the CBDCs, the digital currency, is all about. And they think that both the United States and Europe, they believe that if they eliminate physical cash and go to digital currency, they'll collect 35 to 40% more taxes. And I've basically argued with, I don't care how much more you get. You'll always spend more than whatever you take in. That's simply the way it is. And why do they want Russia? Russia is actually the richest country in the world from natural resources. And it's interesting. You can look up Lindsey Graham, a very notorious neocon. He was on Face the Nation. And he actually said the truth. It was amazing. You know, he said, oh, there is basically $10 to $12 trillion worth of natural resources under Crimea, which is a gas field. All right. We can't allow Russia and China to get that. I thought it was about democracy. See, you know, it's really about money. And they took out, you know, Nord Stream. They now realize it was the Ukrainians that were told to go do it. Why would anybody support Ukraine? I don't know. I know people from surrounding, you know, countries, and basically even down in Macedonia, that, you know, the thing I heard most, you know, if you're going to shake your hands with a Ukrainian, don't count your fingers. Make sure you still have your arm. They're the most notorious corrupt country in the world. They had the number one corrupt politicians with offshore accounts and all the things, the Panama Papers, you name it. I mean, this is Ukraine. It's always been that way. The IMF has withheld payments to say, you got to clean up your corruption. It's just notorious. The joke is that Biden has created more billionaires than any other president in history. The problem is they're all in Ukraine. And it's, you know, taking out Nord Stream, again, it was to hurt Russia. Okay. It had economically, it did not, why, you know, this is just a war to overthrow Russia. That's it. That's plain and simple. Why did the Ukrainians go up there to undermine, to destroy the gas pipeline, which then undermines the German economy, and then turn around and ask Germany for help? You just created an act of war against Germany. Forget Russia. All right. German production has fallen. Gas prices have escalated. this was not good for Germany. It's basically economically declining at this stage in the game. And when it declines, it takes the rest of Europe with it. So in trying to harm the economy of Russia, all they did was they harmed the economy of Europe. Yes, it's illogical, but these people don't think of it that way. I have to get Russia. That's all they think. They don't really look at the consequences of it or anything else. It's like when they went into Iraq. Oh, we'll take this out. We'll do it. Do they ever think, okay, fine, let's say you do. What happens then? They never ask that question. So you took out Saddam Hussein. Then what happened? You can Google Tony Blair's apology. It's on YouTube. And he said, we thought taking him out would help the people, and we subjected them to more sectarian violence. ISIS then rises. Saddam Hussein was at least against the extreme religious groups. All right, so you removed him. He was the check against Iran. But I can tell you, it has been, I think, declassified. They thought they could go in, take Iraq, and then immediately turn and go in and take Iran. That was their plan. All right. And only because they got bogged down, they didn't get to part two. But these are people that don't care about how many people die on the battlefield. That's just collateral damage. Trump actually impressed me. And I've met many heads of state, but I went to dinner at Mar-a-Lago when he was president in March of 2020. And that's when he said he wanted to, bring the troops out of Afghanistan. But the reason he said he was sick and tired of writing letters to their families to say, your son died for God and country. And actually, to quote him, he said, what are we doing there? They've been fighting over borders for 1,000 years. What difference are we going to make? All right. That's why he wanted to exit Afghanistan. And then the people that came in with Biden are just such zealots. No matter what it seemed, whatever Trump did, we just have to reverse it. There was a committee he appointed here in Florida in the military to figure out how to exit from Afghanistan. All right, they had it all worked out, how to exit. Biden comes in. Oh, Trump appointed them. They were all fired. And just bring the people out. Turns into a complete disaster. All right. No planning, nothing. And, Trump closed the border, open it. Whatever he did, they had to do exactly the opposite. He says the sky's blue. No, it's red. This hatred, I don't know, but they have so polarized the country with it. Thank God that Trump just moved his head at the right time and he only got hit in the ear. If he had been killed, I'm telling you, that would have been probably the start of civil war. This is what you've polarized the country so much. Each side is, it's like, when Obama was elected, okay, you didn't vote for him. You moved on. It wasn't a big deal. This time it's a big deal. Ever since then, just look at Hillary. Oh, anybody voted for him, they were traitors. They were, deplorables. You can't do this. And you've just polarized the whole country so much that, to me, I don't even want to go to California again, ever again. To me, it's like a foreign country anymore. Elon Musk is just taking everything out. Why? Because they passed a law that if a child wants to be, change its sex, the teacher is not supposed to tell the parents. I mean, I don't know. They threw Epstein was child molester because the girls were below 18. But a 16-year-old can decide to change their sex. That's okay. I mean, they flip back and forth for every which way from Sunday. I mean, if you don't know what you're doing at 17, but you suddenly have knowledge at 18, but you can change your sex from 12 up. I mean, I don't know. It just, nothing makes sense anymore at all. There's no, honestly, it reminds me of, if you ever read Plato's Republic, there's a debate in there between Socrates and a guy named Thrasymachus. And Thrasymachus says, Socrates, basically, you're wrong. Justice is the same in every form of government, no matter what it is. He says, because justice is only the will of the majority. And he's right. What has changed? And that's 2,500 years ago. Whoever's then in power is, now this is what's going to be justice. They change it. There is no actual rule of law per se. It's very malleable, moves back and forth depending on who's in power. Just look at what they're doing to Trump with all these lawsuits. It's never been done before. Never. That New York case was like really absurd. You can say, okay, my house, I think it's worth $1 million. All right. The bank, I want a mortgage from the bank. The bank says, well, we'll give you $250. Okay. Now they're going to charge you with fraud because it was really only worth $500. You said it was worth $1 million. The bank goes, well, we got our own people. We don't care what they say. All right. Oh no, that's still fraud. I mean, come on. Because you say your house is worth more than what somebody else does, that's fraud. It's just getting to be completely crazy anymore.
Martin, when it comes to the economy of Ukraine, we know that without this aid going from the United States and European Union to Ukraine, they cannot survive. The government is not working there, and their economy is not working. But at the end of the day, how do you find, do you think if, let's assume tomorrow they decide to go after negotiations, they agree on some issues and here comes a ceasefire between Russia and Ukraine, and they start again helping Ukraine to grow. Do you think, how do you find the economy of Ukraine right now? Is it possible? Do you see it in 10 years? How is it going to be, in your opinion?
It's not going to exist. We're heading into a recessionary time. All right. And when you start moving into recession, there's going to be stiff resistance against any money going to a foreign country. Ukraine has basically committed suicide, economic suicide. Zelensky has been counting on, getting trillions of dollars to rebuild it. He's actually this is going to be the best investment for Europe. Yeah, destroy everything, please, Russia, so we get a kickback on everything that's going to be reconstructed. You have destroyed the country completely. Ukrainians that have fled are getting, monthly checks from the EU. All right, they don't have to work. It's just, why go back? there's not going to be anything left standing of Ukraine. All right. When Yugoslavia broke up, what happened? It broke up according to ethnic lines. All right. Back in 2014, I I said, look, Ukraine should be split. All right. The Russian Empire of the Tsars was right up to the river where Kiev sits on. Kiev was where the Rus actually began. In the city, there is the last part of the still standing. It's called the Golden Gate. All right. That's where they were. All right. That's the only thing left because the Mongols came in and basically destroyed the Rus at that point in 1240 AD. And so then, you know, they fled and they rose up again over in Moscow. But the reason you have to understand from the Russian side, Putin is more like a historian. All right. He has nostalgia. When he went in, he says, we're brothers. Don't fight us. Blah, 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 blah. All right. But then Russia also has its neocons. And the criticism that Putin gets inside is like, see, we told you this is not a war against Ukraine. It's a war against NATO and the United States. All right. So you see a lot of comments that, you know, about nuclear attack stuff coming from them. You know, thank God Putin basically was reelected. If he was thrown out and a neocon got in, forget it. This is World War III. You know, he is probably the only adult in the room at this point. He understands what's at stake. And because he is nostalgic that way, he did not want to bomb, to destroy, Kiev. That would be like the Americans destroying London. All right. There's a historical tie there. All right. But the neocons, they don't care. You know, the same way as American neocons, they don't give a shit about anything. You know, they wouldn't be, you know, they'd be celebrating, you know, champagne if they nuked Moscow. This is how much these people hate Russians. And so then you have the neocon Russians equally hating the Americans. You know, I don't know. Maybe the next generation will be better, but you know, these people are going out with a bang. I don't know, but it certainly seems that way. And Ukraine has been nothing more than the vanguard for the neocons. They don't care about the Ukrainian people. The stats from that I hear from Ukrainians, that over 1.1 million are dead. When I initially put out, I said, when this thing was starting, I said 100,000 Ukrainians have died. And everybody, oh, that's Russian propaganda. I said, no, it's not. This comes from Ukraine. I'm sorry. Then you had Ursula make a speech, and she said 100,000 Ukrainians have been killed. Zelensky made her change the speech. I have got both versions on our site. Made her take that out, says that's classified. All right. They didn't want to admit how many Ukrainians are dead. All right, since Boris Johnson went over and killed the peace deal, even Ukrainians admit that over 500,000 Ukrainians have died since then. He's got a lot of blood on his hands. It's all right, goes out, has another, you know, give me a port and a bottle of champagne and celebrate we're winning. That's all they care about. Nobody cares about the Ukrainian people. If they cared about the Ukrainian people, they would have sought peace. Let the Donbass separate. All right. The same way as Yugoslavia. But look at the facts. So what did Zelensky do? He did what he was told. Outlawed speaking Russian. All right. He then outlawed their religion. They're not allowed to report to the Patriarch of Moscow. He set up a patriarch in Kiev. You have to report to him. Then what did he do? You can no longer celebrate Orthodox Christianity, which is Christmas in January. you must celebrate it by December 25th. Look, I think if you took Canada and they tried to outlaw French, you're going to have a civil war. All right. In the United States, could you just stand up and say, you're no longer allowed to speak Spanish? I think you're going to have a war. You can't do these kind of things. You know, there's no way that Zelensky in any way, shape, or form could do such things and assume that this is going to have a peaceful resolution. It was, I think, honestly, it was to do what he was told, poke the bear. Yeah. I mean, it's not going to benefit anybody, absolutely anybody. He thinks all this money is going to come pouring in to rebuild Ukraine, and then they're going to get, you know, instead of just billionaires, they're going to be, you know, trillionaires. You know, it's, he just looked at the money. It's a shame, but, you know, he is not there for the Ukrainian people. And just look at what he said when he was elected. And I've spoken to Ukrainians. They do not believe his election was fair. They think it was rigged. All right. But he stood up and swore he ran on peace with Russia. And as soon as he got in, did the exact opposite. Like every other politician, you know, I mean, what politician actually does what he says he's going to do? These things are all online. You can Google them. I mean, these are facts. Like I say, Boris Johnson made the front page of the Ukrainian press, the Pravda. You can Google this stuff up. And then ask, okay, fine, if in your country, if a foreign, you know, entity came in, all right, take the United States. What if China came in and said, okay, fine, you cannot seek peace with Russia. You're going to do what we tell you. Oh, okay. How would we feel? I mean, put the shoe on the other foot here. I mean, this is not, you know, we need to really look at the people behind this. And it's the same people that did the Iraq war. It's they don't change. They don't change. And like I said, look at Tony Blair's apology. We were wrong. Look at McNamara's apology for Vietnam. We were wrong. They've never been right about a single thing yet.
One of the very important things in this conflict and when it comes to the Russian economy was the role of BRICS in helping Russia to overcome the difficulties coming out of this conflict, this war in Ukraine. And many people are talking about that Russia is a very rich country when it comes to natural resources, but behind the scene, we know how BRICS was important for Russia in this conflict against the West, the whole West, European Union, together with the United States, even Japan, South Korea. And in your opinion, the way that you see BRICS right now, we had 5 members right now. We have new 6 members that Argentina said that we are out. We are not going to be part of this. But nobody knows what's going to be in the future, if they're going to be part of BRICS or not. But at the end of the day, how do you see the future of BRICS? How they're going to manage the situation to overcome the difficulties that the United States together, I'm talking about G7, we know that the United States is the main player of G7. How are they going to find a solution to fight the system that we've seen for such a long time ruling the world, just managing everything? Right now, BRICS is something new. Nobody knows what they're going to do, what's going to be the future, how they're going to manage the things between these countries. Many people are criticizing BRICS for a lot of members. We have 40 members in line to be part of BRICS. But when it comes to the policy, and you've mentioned the SWIFT and the system that BRICS is bringing, that is look like SWIFT. And do you think that it's going to take time, or they're going to do it in near future? I'm talking about in the next, in 5 years, for instance.
You have to understand what BRICS is even about. It came about not, I hear people, oh, gold, dollar's not backed, blah, blah, blah. No currency's backed, okay? So let's, you know, put that nonsense aside. BRICS basically came about because the neocons in the United States, again, they are just brain dead. All they want is to conquer Russia, and they don't think about anything else. All right. This whole thing with SWIFT actually began with Christine Lagarde when she was the head of IMF. She started threatening the tax havens. You will turn over everybody that has secret accounts in your country, or we will remove you from SWIFT and you won't be able to receive any money from anybody. All right. She even did that to the Vatican. In 2014, when Russia went into Crimea, all right, Obama went to SWIFT and said, we want them removed. SWIFT refused. They said, no, you're not going to turn the, you know, the SWIFT system into a military weapon. So what did they do? They replaced the head of SWIFT in 2019. This new guy does whatever he's told. All right. So why did BRICS come about? Because you turn the dollar into a military weapon. All right. Once they removed Russia from SWIFT, all right, other countries began to realize, wait a minute. If we don't do as we are ordered, they will remove us. China, okay, looks at the same thing. You had Blinken saying, if you support Russia, we'll remove you from SWIFT. Okay, thank you very much. What'd they do? They got their chip system up and running. All right. This is geopolitical. It's got nothing to do with economics. Okay. Once you turn the dollar into a weapon, now what do? You divided the entire world. So BRICS will grow. What's going to happen is with this digital currency stuff, I don't think it's really out in the press a lot, but the IMF has already created their own digital currency. And the plan is, we've all heard about this one world government. This is true. You know, it's not a conspiracy theory. I also have a tape on our site. You can Google it up. The French, former French President Hollande, standing in Parliament alongside of Merkel. And he says the reason for the EU, one government basically will eliminate war. This is the same theory that they're using, that they started with the climate change. It's going to take one overseeing body because no individual country can tackle the entire planet. So the United Nations must rise to the one world government. Now, the IMF is creating their digital currency. The United Nations basically want war, because then they can step in and be perceived to be the peacemaker. And then everybody will defer to them. And then they will rise. Okay? The IMF scheme is that their digital currency will then replace the dollar as the reserve currency. In doing so, then you satisfy the effective criticism of both Russia and China. Why do we have to use the currency of our enemy? All right. And they're basically say, well, we're not your enemy. We're an independent IMF world organization. We will use our currency as a reserve. This is what is in store. Okay. This is what they're planning to do. Will they succeed in doing this? That's a separate question. All right. But that is what they're planning to do, because the world has been divided. The world economy, globalization, came to an end. Once you put the sanctions on Russia, you killed it. That was it. I've argued they don't want to hear it, but, you know, the model of how we should live is more from the Roman Empire. All right. A lot of the, you know, the Christians call them, oh, they're pagans. They have hundreds of gods. Not exactly true. All right. Rome conquered all these different lands. Yes. But they did not go in and say, okay, now you have to abandon your religions, everything. You must, you know, accept our gods. They didn't. They allowed everybody, you know, to keep their own cultures. All right. So that's why Rome flourished. It was an empire that lasted for about 1,000 years, because there was no centralized control like that. They were all allowed to have their own little culture. If you were in France, being part of the Roman Empire was beneficial, because now you could make whatever, clay pots or whatever, and sell them to somebody in Syria. All right, free trade, no taxation. You know, they didn't have income taxes. So that promoted world peace. As long as everybody benefits, you're not going to bite the hand that feeds you. All right. And we were achieving that. China was in, Russia was in. And as long as everybody's trading, then the people themselves in those countries will not allow their governments to destroy their own livelihood. All right. That's the lesson from Rome. All right. When you allow the politicians, oh, ban this one, do that, because I don't like this guy. Now you're messing with the economy of your own people. All right. That's why we're heading into recessions. All right. You've basically unwound globalization, so to speak. And so that's really what's behind this BRICS. It's got nothing to do with gold or anything else. This is geopolitical. Why use the currency of your enemy? All right. And look, China dumped $53 billion of U.S. debt the first quarter. This is why we're heading towards default. It's got nothing to do with the level of debt. It could be a quadrillion. That's not the issue. The issue is we're in this Ponzi scheme. You issue new debt to pay off the old. As long as that keeps going, you can keep kicking the can down the road. It all comes to an end, and many governments have fallen this way. When you cannot sell the new debt to pay off the old, then you can't pay the old. All right. That's what we're into. And so you had Blinken, who's the neocon in charge of the State Department, threatening China over Taiwan. You go in there, we're going to wage blah, 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 all of this. I mean, he's threatening world on basically, you know, four fronts. There, North Korea, Russia, and in the Middle East, all right? He's insane, completely insane. but you're threatening China over Taiwan, all right? So if China now realizes, okay, they're the largest holder of U.S. debt, and if they went into Taiwan, what happens? The U.S. won't pay. We're not going to pay interest on or redeem any debt that China holds. You default. That's how governments have gotten away with it. That's the whole purpose of war most of the time. You default on the debts. You can go on eBay and buy all the bonds of different countries. 1931, most of all Europe, you know, defaulted. Britain went into a moratorium, suspended debt, and then at least returned. China, you know, South America, you can find these bonds. They look very nice. Frame them up. You know, they look pretty, you know, but they've all been defaulted on. This is what they do. All right. So China's not stupid. Janet Yellen had to hop on a plane, run over to China and say, oh, please continue to buy our debt. And response is, let me see. You want us to lend you $100 billion so you can buy missiles to shoot us? That doesn't make exactly sense. So this is what's unwinding here. Okay. And like I said, these neocons don't think about anything. So it's not just Germany and the gas pipeline. They've done this to China. Oh, you do this and I'm going to go. Okay, fine. They are the holder of U.S. debt. If they don't continue to buy it, you're not going to sell new debt to buy more weapons to shoot them. All right. Who's going to buy it? They don't understand the economy. They really do not. All they look at is, I got to get Russia. This is our problem. They are brain dead. They have no worldly experience. It's just hatred. All right. So as they're running around threatening the entire world, you're not going to be able to sell the debt. As the debt goes down, oh, you got all these people, all the Fed will lower rates, blah, blah, blah. Okay, sounds nice. If you cannot sell the long-term debt, guess what? The long-term rates continue to rise to try and entice people to buy it. You know, the Fed can only control the short-term rate, but the spread between the short-term and long-term is widening. Look at Europe. When they were creating the euro, they came to me. I met with them. Okay, fine. What they were saying, oh, we're going to create a single currency. Everybody will pay the same interest rate. I said, that's bullshit. You have to consolidate the debt. And I can tell you what really happened because I was there. All right. They told me, look, we just have to get the euro in first. We'll worry about the debt later. Why? Because coal from Germany, and you can look this up, he knew if he allowed the German people to vote on joining the euro, he admitted he would lose 7-1. So what did he do? He took Germany into the euro unilaterally. The German people were never allowed to vote. He even admitted later, before he died, he acted like a dictator. All right. So what happened? He took them in and he said, all right, I'm doing this so I can't be criticized. You cannot consolidate the debt. I warned them. I said, if you do not create a national debt and consolidate it, this is not going to work. I said, the volatility from the currency, it's just going to move to the bond market. So now if you trust Germany, but you don't like Italy, guess what? You buy the bonds and you sell the Italian. This is what's happening. All the interest rates are different. I said, in the United States, fine. We have a single currency. But every state, 50 states, they have different credit ratings. So you buy one, you stay away from another one. This is the way capital works. But I'm telling you, the people that I have dealt with in over 40 years in different governments, all around, they have no idea of how the economy works at all. And it's all, what do I have to do to win the next election? That's it. Look, even when China went to, you know, communism fell and the Asian currency crisis happened in 97. I was the only one invited from the West to the Central Bank of China. I met with them. Okay, fine. Then they took me off to a facility. to help explain how to become, you know, capitalist. It was a very interesting experience. When I got back, guys from the Treasury and the Fed said, gee, what was it like? You met with them. I said, I took the knife, stuck it in their back, and I turned it. I said, it's very interesting. They only hire people with experience. All the people I met from the central bank, they had been sent out, worked on trading desks in Tokyo, New York, and London, and then they went back to run the central bank. I was shocked when I was asked, why didn't they call somebody from Harvard? I said, no, we're not interested in academics. You actually know, I've been a hedge fund manager. They know, they knew me. They knew that I was a trader and I knew how markets actually work, not in theory. That's why they called me, because they were all sent out and had actual experience working on desks. I said, we don't do that. And ECB, no. Treasury, no. Fed, no. They're all academics. The Fed has more PhDs than I think any institution in the world. Can they chew gum and walk at the same time? I don't know. You have to understand these things. It's like I say, that our biggest fault is we get party politics. You will vote as we tell you. And who decides that? Bunch of guys in a smoke-filled room in the back who never stand for election.
Yeah. Marlon, thank you so much for being with us today. Great pleasure to talk with you.
Well, I hope that, shed some light on what we really face and definitely understand. I mean, I've dealt with more central banks than I think anybody, even central bankers. But I've just been called in everywhere from China to the Middle East. I mean, you name it, I've met with them all. And the difference is that I don't see any real difference between one government and another. They all act in their own self-interest.
Yeah.
So thank you for inviting me.
Thank you.
I hope that opens a few eyes.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.